You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 368. Hi, welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's program, the new classic crew reunited after some time away from each other to get some space, to find yourself, to, you know, see if there's anyone else in the world that you might want to love. But back with us tonight, once again, Mr. Ricky Frankel out of the West Coast there. Hey, Ricky.
Hey, guys. It has been a while. I think it's been like, what, 3 or 4 episodes now?
I mean, you're not the hot new thing now. Now we got Sean, and he's got like skin like a baby.
Yeah.
And we gotta.
And then I think, wasn't Sam on recently too?
Maybe.
And Tom.
Not too long ago.
I don't know. And I know everyone loves Tom. So, and I know Tom's
everybody
on.
Everybody loves Tom.
And Tom's,
I mean,
on
if we
recently.
Could just do. If we could have Tom on talking to Tom, that would really be the ideal show.
No, listen. I haven't been with you guys, but I have been with the audience because I've put out two interviews since being on the since the last episode I was on. So I'm.
It makes me feel pretty good about being lax and posting. And I'm like, oh shit, I haven't posted the episode in a while. And I look and I'm like, oh, Ricky's posted some stuff. Fine. Anyways, also joining us on tonight's show, of course, Mr. John Gentile out of parts unknown for legal reasons, Pennsylvania.
If you fall, I will catch you time after time.
If we do, really out of tune.
You know, that song is forever emblazed in my mind because my mom used to have a station wagon. An Oldsmobile station wagon, and it came with a cassette, and that might be the first cassette I ever heard, and that song was on that cassette, and I never forgot it.
Wood panel,
you know it, baby.
Everyone's mom had like a wood panel station wagon if you were of a certain age.
It's a good mom mobile. What can I say?
I know. I used to have nightmares when I was a kid of waking up in the back seat of the station wagon and there being no one in the front seat and it just rolling down the street, like just driving away and no one's there. And I'm in the back seat.
I had similar nightmare. Well, not, I don't know how, if I just once or multiple times I was in the car and it like slipped in neutral or I didn't even know what neutral was at the time. And it was like rolling down the street or something. And I was in it. There was nothing I could do about it. Interesting.
Yeah, like recurring type dream I used to have when I was a kid that just, and it wasn't rolling, like it was going somewhere, like it was driving with intent.
Oh, that's creepy, man. It's a Tales from the Crypt.
It kept happening, but
you know what dream I've probably had 30 times, I haven't had in a while, the dream where it's finals week and you realize you have a final in a class you never went to because you forgot you had the class to begin
with. I hate those.
I've totally you know what's weird, everyone's had those, and it's one of those things that I don't believe in there being like a lot of like psychic bullshit in the world, but that if there's anything that's going to convince me that there's some sort of a communal telepathy going on, it's that. Because how does everyone have that same dream like so specifically? Like it's because like I've absolutely had it where all of a sudden like I'm like oh shit, did I have that math class? Like I don't think I actually went to that class after the second one, and then like, oh god, I got to be there for the, like it gives me the fucking anxiety just thinking about it.
The funny thing is, if it happened in real life, you probably could just go to the bursar's office or whatever and be like, listen, I forgot I had this class. Obviously, I'm not trying to get be sneaky about it. I didn't go to a single class. You know what I mean? And they'd probably let you off the hook once. Second, and this is true, the last time I had that dream, probably about 2 years ago, I've had that dream so many times, I said, this is a dream. I've had this dream before. I don't even care. So I was in the dream for, it felt like several minutes, but who knows really how long it was. But I'm like, I'm not nervous at all because I know this is a dream. And then I woke up eventually.
That's like, what is that? Is that lucid dreaming? Is that what they call that?
I believe they call that lucid dreaming, and it's a lot
where
of fun.
You take control. Where you're like, fuck it. I'm going to take off my pants and start punching people because, you know, no, who's going to stop me? At least that's what I would do. Anyways, so we have a few things to talk about tonight. Some interesting drama that we'll get into on tonight's show. This was another week where some stuff happened, and that's good. So before we get into that, and before we even get into the mail, I guess some people have seen some shows, so we should talk about that. We were talking right before the show if I actually gave a report from my big Quebec Music Festival thing that I was at on the podcast, and I sort of think that I did last week. But even if I didn't, there's an article that I wrote about it on Punk News that you should go read, because I would appreciate it if someone read it, and it's really big. And it details my various experiences there. And there are certain people, and I will only let you, the Punk News podcast listenership, know. There are certain people that I interviewed for this show, or for that festival, that were on incredible amounts of drugs.
What kind of drugs?
Amazing drugs. And I had to try to interpret those interviews in a way that did not draw attention to that fact in that article. So if you want to go and read it and try to guess what I'm talking about, then that's a fun little game for you. John, I got to tell you that, and we may have talked about this before, but I'm just going to hijack and talk about it. The one thing that was really amazing about this festival was that I was at a certain point interviewing on adrenaline, which was really weird. Like, not like I wasn't like, you know, on some sort of adrenaline based human enhancement drug. I mean that, like,
I was interviewing on adrenaline, guys. And by that, no, I mean, no. I was also still meth.
No. So basically, like, so like, John, this was not a normal kind of like music festival that we've covered, because a normal music festival that we cover, we'll go and we'll be like, hey, publicist, can we go to this festival? And they'll say, okay, we'll give you a ticket, but you got to, you got to write a review or do an interview or something, right? And there's some sort of like exchange of access for doing a couple things. This festival, I mean, like, full disclosure for everyone, like, I was flown there, and I was flown there as part of like a press junket.
Jesus.
Which means, like, I had a handler, and the handler was giving us assignments throughout the day. And it was very interesting. So, like, I would, you know, I would kind of get up and meet my crew in the morning, and we'd be like, all right, well, you know, the festival wants us to kind of to go check out like X, Y, and Z in the town, because it's, you know, it'll help us like convey the stuff about the community that they want to convey sort of to the rest of the world. And then, okay, so, you know, Punk News, you got to talk to this band at 6:30 and this band at 7:45 and this band at like 11, and then other publication, you got to go talk to this one here and this one here. And basically they like shopped around which publications were there to like some, the upper level of the publicity apparatus that was actually talking to the bands. And the bands like went and picked who they wanted to talk to. So there were a lot of times where all of a sudden it was like, Adam, some band you don't really know, you're interviewing in an hour and a half. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like, I'm looking at my phone being like, what's this band's deal? And then I end up in a room with them, and they're looking at me and probably on drugs. And I got to go, and then I interview them. So that kept happening all weekend long. And at a certain point it became kind of exciting, because I was just like, yeah, like what's the world going to throw at me? And then they're like, Adam, you got to go interview like A Place to Bury Strangers. And I'm like, okay, I don't know anything about that band. And I walk in the room and I'm like, going to do this and somehow interview a band. So that kept happening. And I was kind of getting off on it by the end of the weekend. It went from being terrifying to sort of exciting. So I know it's probably not the most professional way I could have run this, but I'm not a professional, so
Al contraire, Adam, I've done my fair share of interviews, if I may say so, and I find that the very best ones are bands that you really, really are a big fan of, or bands you don't know much about, and you're like, oh shit, I did not research this enough, and you just start the interview, and you just keep talking, and interesting stuff comes out. I find those are the two best interviews that come out.
What I was talking about this with some of the other people that were on our crew, and what I was liking it to was, let's say you're sitting on like the top of like a grassy hill, And you've got
John F. Kennedy's driving by.
John Kennedy. No. And let's say you have, I was going to say a marble, but let's not say marble, John. Let's make this truly Italian. So you've got like a bunch of bocce balls with you, ooh, right? So, you roll one down the hill and it might roll like half a foot and stop. And then you roll another one and it rolls a little bit. And then you roll one and it just catches the right groove in the grass and it just sort of keeps going. A lot of the times that's what it felt like with some of these interviews where I'd go in and I'd be like, hey, I'm going to ask you a question. And then their answer is like two words. And I'm like, okay, so that ball didn't roll very far down the hill. And then I'm like, all right, what about this? And you ask them something and then whatever it is about that question all of a sudden clicks. And then they talk for 15 minutes. Like they talk for 15 minutes and I'm not doing anything. And I'm like that's perfect. Like, that's what you're looking for. You're like, did I roll the ball properly that it's just going to roll on its own now? And that was what was really interesting about that. So yeah, if anyone ever wants to hire me to be a incredibly unprofessional interviewer, I'll do it as long as you fly me. That's how it works. But anyways, though, go read my article. It's, if you want to find it, it's called, just search Punk News for like FME. The letters, and then you'll find out about that. John, you saw Mr. Glenn Danzig.
Danzig! I'll be quick about this. I saw Danzig. He's doing his How the Gods Kill, which is Danzig's 320th anniversary tour. So he's doing about five songs from How the Gods Kill. His set is a little shorter than it used to be. His voice isn't quite what it used to be. However, once his voice warms up, man, Danzig is rocking. He seemed particularly enthused by the Philly audience, so he did about 16 songs. The How the Gods Kill song sounded amazing. One of the new tracks from the new album sounded amazing. He did something off E. Luciferi, which sounds amazing. And people got to realize, man, the guy's like 63 or something. Like he's no spring chicken, and he is sounding real good. Not, you know, his voice isn't 100%. But his voice is 90%, and the guy's like 62, 63. And I give him credit for going out there, and he is just kicking ass. But to me, what was one of the most fun things, first of all, it was an awesome show. You should go see Danzig if you like Danzig. It was an awesome show. What really, I guess, was exciting to me is I haven't been to a show in a while where the band just rocked. And I don't mean rock like destroyed the place like, you know, like Off or Melvin's, where it's like just super like bombastic and destructive. I mean like rocks. I mean it rocks. And I don't mean that it's like cheesy like faux rock like Black Crows or Foo Fighters. I mean Danzig is probably one of the last true rockers there are. And it was so much fun to be at this show where the band was just rocking, you know, just swinging metal blues, totally jacked up, total energy, but had a real swing and a real cadence to it. And I haven't been to a rock show like that in a long time. And that, to a degree, that is one of punk rock's shortcomings, is a lot of punk bands, not all punk bands, but a lot of punk bands forego rocking, if you will, for toughness, mania, weirdness, or softness. And so it was really inspiring to me just to like see one of the greatest rockers rocking, doing an awesome job. And it was an awesome show in Danzig's the Man, and I love rock music. It rocked.
Yeah, clearly.
It did, man. Like, it's kind of not cool to rock anymore unless you're Dave Grohl and you get up there and basically the point of your songs are, now we're going to rock. And, you know, they do a song about rock and it's just stupid and cheesy and put upon. Danzig doesn't rock because he wants to rock. Danzig rocks because he's Glenn Danzig and it's just naturally within the music and it just swings. And part of that is because Danzig grew up on blues and, you know, classic 70s rock, where a lot of punkers now grew up on punk rock. So I've got this weak thesis or this unproven thesis that bands kind of focus on one aspect of the previous previous generation, but then to the detriment of the other aspects of that music. For example, the earliest punk rockers did rock, you know, but then when hardcore came around, they took the toughest, most electrifying part of that music, but they lost the swing, you see. And then like with 90s hardcore, they took, I guess, the screaming and growling of hardcore, but then they lost, you know, kind of the lower, nastier edge and so forth. You know what I mean? And so it's a shame that that's how it works. Is you people tend to magnify one aspect of their influences, but kind of lose the rest, if you will. And Danzig was just the man, and he sounded great.
That's cool. Sounds like a nice show, Mr. Ricky.
Yes.
So you went to It's Not Dead. Now that's where those audio interviews that you posted were from. But any just the general kind of recap of how that was?
Yeah. So
actually, maybe like qualify this for people too. Like, let them know where It's Not Dead actually happened.
Okay, so It's Not Dead happened not in Los Angeles, even though for some reason people were saying it was. It's in San Bernardino, which is way the fuck out in the desert. But it was in this gigantic amphitheater, and there were, I think, four stages total. A huge lineup, just like the 2015 one. They didn't do 2016. This is Kevin Lyman, by the way. He puts this on. But this is the last stop of the Rancid Dropkick Murphys tour. So I've seen Rancid like two or three times before, but I'd never seen the Dropkick Murphys. So I was very, you know, I was very excited to see them. But I have an exclusive for the listeners right now, because I've only put out two of the three interviews that I did there. I can tell you, and I can give the listeners now who's the last interview, if you guys would like.
Yeah, who is it?
It is Chris and Scott of the Flatliners.
Oh, cool.
So,
cool.
I spent about an hour doing interviews. I took the train to, I went with a fellow editor, Stevie Allen, and her husband, John, because it was closer to go to their place, crashed the night before, and then we headed out. I forgot my original recorder, and I had to use my phone, which I was not happy about. And someone called me in the middle of the Flatliners interview, so it'll have to be cut. I'm not happy about that, but it'll be cut, and you won't be able to notice. What else happened? So I spent about an hour doing interviews. We also had a similar press situation, Adam. We didn't get to fly, what's really nice about being in the press tent is that you get free water, so you don't have to spend $10 on water or whatever. And Mike Cubillas at Earshot helped me out, got me all the interviews I needed to do. I did Spike from Me First and the Gimme Gimmies, and Trevor Riley from A Wilhelm Scream as well. But like I said, there are four stages. I got to see Wilhelm Scream were the best of the night of the festival, in my opinion. They were so good. But I saw Me First, I saw Off, I saw the Mad Caddies, I saw the Addicts, the Buzzcocks, a little bit of the Casualties, the Flatliners, Good Riddance, Kevin Seconds.
Ricky, with the Casualties, it was without Jorge.
Yes.
How was the audience? When I saw it was Casualties, negative approach, then Casualties. Mm-hmm. I thought everybody was there for the Casualties, but it literally cleared out 90% from Negative Approach to Casualties. Almost nobody was there for the Casualties when I saw them in Philadelphia about 2 years ago. I'm curious, how was the audience with the Casualties at It's Not Dead?
They seemed to be really into it. And it might be because they have a huge following here in California. So I think that maybe that might be the difference. But, you know, they definitely were fine. I did miss, and I'm not happy about this, I missed Reagan Youth. I missed the Madcap. Reunion. And
that's Reagan Youth isn't really Reagan Youth.
Yeah, I know. But I still wanted
one guy.
I still wanted to see them. I missed. I also missed U.S. Bombs, and I wanted to see Wraths just because that's Jim Lindbergh of Pennywise. That's his other band, apparently. So I wanted to check that out. Fortunately, I wasn't able to see them. I spent about an hour or two of my time at the festival interviewing and hanging out in there, so I couldn't see everyone. Now, what was interesting though was I if you'd listen to the Spike Slauson interview, I mentioned this briefly in the intro. I was escorted to like a building that was air conditioned, and it was where all the green rooms were, because he was wearing like his Me First and the Gimme Gimmies outfit, and it was easily 105 degrees the whole day. And so he was in there. So it was a nice change. I got to see all the just how well these artists are really treated, and just a huge buffet, drinks everywhere. It was really cool. So I got to do that. Something else that was really cool. Unfortunately, there wasn't like a Fat Records booth where I could just dig through the records. But what was also really cool about It's Not Dead Fest was they had an art tent of just punk artists and stuff like that. And guess who was there? It was Chris Sherry was there, and he was selling like portraits and stuff, like kind of like these Sharpie portraits. So I gave him one of the last punk news pins that Sam Barrett sent us for Punk Rock Bowling, and talked with him for a bit. And I bought one of his portraits of Joey Ramone, which was really cool. A nice like souvenir. I don't like holding shit at these long ass festivals. So I went at the very last minute to get it. Now what was also really cool was, okay, so first of all, Rancid played new songs, and I have to say, I'm not thrilled with the record, but the new songs I'd say sound better live. So that's just one thing I wanted to mention. And then what was also really cool, and I didn't expect this, but, the Dropkick Murphys and Rancid got up on did an encore together, and they did like a Ramones cover. They did Johnny Cash and Cox Bar, and so that was a pretty cool way to end the night. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I don't know. It was just as exhausting as last time, and it was super fun. I hope they do it next year. This was, but I just don't know how they're going to outdo themselves every single time, because the year before had the not the year before, but 2015, the headliners were like Bad Religion, NoFX, Descendants, and Pennywise all together on the main stage. This was awesome. So look out for the Flatlines interview. We talk about Canadian comedy a little bit too. So, That's pretty much all I got for that.
Cool. I'd love to go. That's one of those things that like I would have the best of time at that kind of festival, but they do not happen here. And you know, once you factor in the costs of flights and accommodations or anything like that, it would be like, you know, do I want to pay, you know, $1,000 to go see some show somewhere? And it just, you know, that's never going to work, but yeah. I'm glad you had a good time. It sounds cool. All right, John, do we have any mail that we want to get into before we get into the shit here?
Yeah, we got lots of mail. Huh? I mean, do we want to cover it this week or do we
want to? I don't know. Do some mail, and then we'll bang the gong when we want you to stop.
We got some good mail. This first mail is kind of funny. This first mail, you can always use that podcast at punknews.org. This is from Chad. Adam White, I believe you have three children. My wife and I are considering having children. How many should we have if I want to maintain my current punk rock lifestyle? Also, what songs did you use to raise your virility from Chad?
Love the second question.
I was not expecting that exact question. So I have two kids, so I would definitely not recommend three because that sounds horrible. We have two, and we had two fairly close to each other. Like my daughter is four and my son is two. And then we have stopped a team of top surgeons has ensured that that ain't going to happen anymore. And the reason for us to kind of like have the two and then have them close together was specifically because like we want to, you know, have them grow up and be, you know, sharing a lot of the same stuff because they'll be kind of close in age, and then eventually becoming people who leave the house at about the same time so that we can continue living our lives. We know some people that have had like, you know, three, they're thinking of four, and the spans get kind of bigger between them, and then it's like you're going to be, you know, parenting a young child forever. And then by the time you get out of that, you're just going to be old and gross like Tom Trauma. And you don't want to. I don't actually know that. But yeah, so that, I mean, that was our plan. So we had two and we got out. I thought you were going to ask me like, what songs did like I play to the kids or something like that? Not to raise my virility. So what would have been a virility raising song? I'm trying to think here. We gotta put this in the context of time, right? So this would have been, my daughter's four. So this would have been like 2000 and I guess what would have been 2012 ish. Let's see. What came out 2012? Had been current.
First Jeff Rosenbach album, I think.
Star fucking hipsters.
Danzig Death Red Sabbath.
I'm trying to think what else came out in 2012.
Melvin's Nude with Boots.
Didn't a Dwarves album come out too?
None of these things are the right answer. Hold on a sec here. We're gonna find out. I'm gonna look at. Of course, I go to look by looking at iTunes, and it's like iTunes has been updated. Click this to make something.
I hate iTunes. Right here.
Hold on, give me 2 seconds here. I'm going to find out.
Well, listen, while Adam's researching...
Let's see, what was going on?
While Adam's researching his virility, we'll come back to that. I'll throw this out to Ricky. Ricky, I don't know if you were on the podcast where I basically said it was BS that Kanye West got a free pass for dissing on poor Taylor Swift.
Oh, yeah. I listened to it.
This is from Patio Swing from Oregon, and he's got an extended email. I agree with a lot of what he says. I disagree with some of what he says. Here's what he says. Hey, guys. First time, long time. The Taylor Swift-Kanye West beef. If it can be taken as anything more serious than a long game publicity strategy, I think it relates to the Dickies Worn Women squabble from Warped Tour. It's a case of the left eating its own tail, where Swift should in essence inspire feminist support, a woman making her way to stardom and usually taking the high road. Being that she's young, attractive, successful is one thing. That she's white is where it all falls apart. I would submit that Kanye is granted clemency for his repugnant behaviors because he's in the eyes of the liberal fan disadvantaged for his racial and economic background. It's a battle of who's more to be pitied. One can draw the correlation with the Dickies and War on Women because it's a fight between punks being able to do what punks do, a la thwart social conventions, and a younger band with radical ideas claiming a say in what goes on in the scene. While there may be strong opinions on both sides, I believe it's another case of the liberal snake eating its own tail. Whomever's side seems to come from a position of less privilege is more to be pitied and therefore wins the argument. War on Women clearly preemptively claim moral high ground on any conflict, with a band name chosen to present themselves as both the aggressor and the oppressor equally. And then he's got a little bit more here. Give me 1 second. It's very popular to be feminist in the scene right now, and it's the more radical, the better. While I think feminism is a good thing, I was at Warped Tour this year, and every young teen girl, upon entrance to the park, made a beeline for the War on Women tent for the merch. And while most of these girls were strolling around all day, very few actually attended the band's set. I think War on Women's music scores about 2 compared to the 10 of Bad Cop, or Barbed Wire Dolls. But it's become more or less a virtue signal to claim to be a War on Women fan. I met War on Women and they are very nice people, but the issue surrounding them and the Dickies is, I think, indicative of a wider issue. That nowadays, once someone has claimed the role of a victim, then you may not disagree with them on any subject or you'll be labeled a Nazi. To bring it all back around, Taylor Swift never claimed any greater cause than a talent for making music that she wants people to buy and enjoy. I think if she wanted to draw support to herself over Kanye, she would have to elicit moral pity from the populace for her gender or otherwise. The fact that she hasn't is perhaps admirable. She's an artist. Thus far, she has let her art talk. Thanks, guys. I love the podcast. Please disagree with me so I can learn from your perspective. I think Patty... He says a lot in there, and I think some of that would be considered controversial.
Oh, yeah.
I think he has some good points with some of the things that he's saying. I disagree with some of that stuff.
Oh, Ricky, man.
Solve the problem.
Okay, so I think – I think the problem's actually pretty easily solved. I'm not kidding. Patty, with all due respect, I think you're conflating these two different issues these two different occurrences. I don't think – race had anything. I didn't see race coming into the whole Taylor Swift Kanye West thing. I think it's.
Oh, I did.
I didn't. I thought it was just him being an asshole and her retaliating. But I was listening to this episode. And I gotta tell you, people, we gotta not put these people on pedestals. Kanye West is a horrible artist and a horrible human being. Taylor Swift is.
Not done. Is he a horrible human? I mean, I don't think he's a nice guy, but is he horrible?
I mean, listen. Fine, I won't say horrible, but I'll take back horrible. But he's not a good person. Okay, he's clearly not a good person.
He's a jerk.
Yeah, I mean clearly what he did at the VMAs. What, God, we're talking about the VMAs. Okay, was not good. Was not good. It was a shitty thing to do. It was uncalled for. He was drunk too. The guy's, I think, a major Kanye, man. He's a major egomaniac, total narcissist. I don't think he's talented. I don't know why people like such mediocre music. Now when it comes to Taylor Swift, I think she tries to have this public, has this public persona of like this very, innocent girl, but she has a massive, not only a massive following, but a huge army of people working for her and trying to make sure that she keeps that image. And I know. And so like when she does like these sudden, like Instagram, like, or not Instagram. I mean, she's been in contact with people like on her Instagram that are just normal people. Or like when she gives like presents to some underprivileged fan, that is all scripted. That is complete. That is all horseshit. Okay. These are all fake people. Stop paying attention to them. Who cares? Who cares if Kanye is mean to Taylor? Who cares if Taylor strikes back?
I care.
Who cares? It's so stupid.
I care.
These people
because
do not.
It's endemic of a systematic sexism towards women in the music industry.
Okay, that's the thing. Punk was supposed to reject this whole thing. That's why I'm surprised it became such a big subject on the podcast. Why put these people on a pedestal? Why care? If something's legitimately some sort of sexism is actually happening in the scene, let's talk about that. But these people, you know, who knows? I would not be surprised. I'm not saying it was. I would not be surprised if their PR people were actually in contact in the background.
Alex Jones talking about this.
Listen, what you think? This isn't an Alex Jones thing. These things are very.
I don't think there's a big Taylor Swift Kanye conspiracy where they're working together.
Yes, I think
Taylor's annoyed by Kanye, and Kanye.
How much of a victim could she really be? She used a song. She's probably going to have one of the biggest songs of the year and make millions off it.
Doesn't make it okay to call women bitches. Doesn't make it okay to display naked images of women against their consent.
It's
doesn't
Hollywood, it okay. dude. Who it it it's not. Real. It's not real.
Well,
okay.
It is real. He's calling her a bitch. That's real.
I'm telling you, these people,
and that trickles down to how people behave.
That's true. That's true. And clearly they're not like Kanye's not exactly the best role model. Okay. Like he's not, but I would take everything for a grain of salt. You don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You really don't. I have family that work in Hollywood. This stuff is there's so much going on behind the scenes that you can't take everything, even if there is some
giant Kanye Taylor Swift conspiracy, which I don't think there is.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It's still important to attack it if there is not, because otherwise, for any problem there is, you just say, "Well, maybe it's not real."
Well,
if this is scripted, this does happen in the music industry and in all industries. In reality, so even if this is scripted, it's still important to attack it as if it's not.
Stop paying attention to celebrities; they're stupid. And by the way, Taylor's doing the best thing. This whole I feel bad for, you know, like you shouldn't feel too bad for her. She's going to make a ton of money off this controversy. If anything, this has only boosted her career and has helped her major shift from being a country star to a pop star.
It's not just about Taylor, though. It's about the underlying sexism and double standard that we see in the music industry and media in general and the world as in general. This is just a focal point because they're both famous.
Okay, but again,
I'm going to interject into this conversation.
Adam, what's your secret to virility?
With my secret to virility. So here you go. Because I don't really care about that other topic at all. So I went back and I looked at things that I would have had playing during the era when I may have fathered a human child. And so I think that if you take these three records, some combination of this should get you fire and live ammo. So here's what you need. First of all, and this is all stuff that would have been outed around that time. So as far as I'm concerned, this is actually what happened. Okay. The first Radioactivity record. Yellow cover, Markmen, right? That record. Okay. Gets you going. It's all fast, right? You need that. It's probably good for your sperm, right? So that one first. Secondly, Torch's Harmonicraft, or however you want to pronounce it, came out at about that time too, maybe a little bit earlier. Torch, there was a time where we were all listening to Torch, and it was great, and it was just loudness and noise, and you need that. I think that's sort of the sustained middle of this thing. So Radioactivity wakes him up. Torch just kind of like sustains them, right? Gives them power.
Strength training.
Strength training, exactly, right? Yeah, Radioactivity is more like the aerobics end of it, right? So Torch is your strength training. And then the third one here is Pissed Jeans Honey's record came out then, right? Which is just full of just like nasty, you know, humanity is stupid shit. And that's really that's taking your little soldiers there and just giving them the real talk about what the world's like, and that, you know what, they're not all going to survive this, and in fact most of them won't. And it really, you know, gets them in the right headspace for what they got to do. So those three records are the ones that you need.
Can I do
something Taylor Swift.
Let me just wrap it up, my point up. We live,
it's gotta be about sperm.
No, Adam, we live in it. Listen,
sperms. Here's a real question. So only one sperm, generally speaking, makes it to the egg and penetrates the egg and fertilizes the egg out of millions or even hundreds of millions, right?
I mean, unless there's more, but like more babies that I don't know about. But I think there's just one.
Is every sperm genetically identical?
I don't fucking know. You think I am, John?
Yeah, I think you're my seventh grade biology teacher.
I have probably less knowledge than him. Anyways, Ricky, make a serious point. Yeah, about sperm.
Okay. We live in a time where...
I mean, or make one about sperm.
We live in a time where and I'm talking about mainstream stuff. We live in a time where the more outrage there is of a certain event, the more money is made for that person, the more attention they get, and the cycle goes. Okay. That is what happened here. Okay. I hate these people are vapid. They are annoying. They make bad music. Ignore them.
I disagree. I don't think Taylor Swift or Kanye are vapid.
100%
ignoring this issue makes it goes away.
It doesn't. No, I'm not saying it goes away, but I'm just saying like these people are not like this whole thing about them being like victims. Are they victims? These people are some of the most successful and wealthy people in the world.
Sure, you can be a victim and be successful.
But
and wealthy.
You know what? They're not number one on my priorities list. Okay,
but even so, it's not really about her. It's about the persistent, systematic sexism in the industry and outside the industry. But I don't think we're going to agree on this, Ricky.
Probably. God, I mean, I'm not saying.
Wow. Listen, Jeff.
John, I'm not saying.
This is from Jeff. Wait. Hi, my name is Jeff. I'm a big fan of the show. I've discovered a lot of rad bands from you guys and gals. I do have one question. What's with the constant overkill of politeness? You are a punk podcast, and rarely do you ever shit on a band that sucks. Rarely do you ever just flat out make fun of someone, even when they obviously deserve it. Also, I don't know if it's a joke, but the triangulation of locations during the introductions, is that a joke, or are you genuinely concerned? Anyway, I have a request. Prove how punk you are. Prove that you don't give a shit on people's opinions. Name one band or group or artist that you think is total shit and say why. Thanks, from Jeff. And I'm going to answer this real quickly as to why we probably don't bang on bands too much. One of the main reasons is the way the podcast, this is a little bit behind the scenes action at Punky's Podcast. I generally put the program together and then Adam White edits it, if you will, as to what we're going to cover. So I generally don't pick bands I don't like unless it's like Green Day or somebody. The point being is Green Day, if we make fun of them, they can take it. They're a gigantic band. They're rich. They can go cry in their sacks of money. I generally try not to diss too bad, like small bands that I don't like, because it's like they're just small bands. It's like they don't need me kicking on them. I mean, there's so many good bands to talk about. Why do I need to stomp on small band that isn't making any money or anything like that? The other main reason is I actually used to about 3 or 4 years ago, there were a couple of bands that I used to attack on a regular basis, not because I hated those bands, but because I hated what they represented. Or not hated, but I was annoyed by what they represented. So I would use those bands and attack them regularly as a way to attack all bands of a certain genre, of that certain genre. The problem was I kept banging on those bands so much that they really took it personally, and they were really, really getting bummed out about it. And word got kind of out that they were really pissed off at me, which I don't mind if people are pissed off at me. But the point for me, the Punk News podcast and Punk News as a whole, isn't to make people feel bad. The point is to talk about stuff we like and maybe give an objective opinion on what we think is good, what we think isn't good. So if you don't think it's good, you can say it's not good, but you don't need to keep banging on somebody, because the main point of this isn't to make people feel bad and to put them down. It's really to enjoy the art of punk rock. Adam White?
Yeah, here, I'll weigh in on a few of those things. All right, so the triangulation thing is, you, John, can I talk about this?
I don't want to talk about, I mean, I'm outside Philadelphia. I don't want to get into, you mean the very specifics? I don't want to get into that.
No. This just like you know, there's absolutely been people that have sent members of this show or members of the Punk News universe like threats and things like that in the past. And every once in a while, if someone's doing something like that, we get a little bit more sensitive about talking too much about where we are. I mean, I'm not too bad about it because
you have borders to protect you.
Yeah. Like no one can fucking penetrate Canada, right? Like it's. Basically like under a dome, but so I don't know, every once in a while we get a little bit sensitive to that, so we try not to talk too much about where they are. I mean, I like mentioning locations personally because then they can give some context, but plus I just like to say triangulate. It's one of my favorite words, so this gives me an opportunity to say it. I like that you started this letter about like, why aren't you guys more angry right after you two wouldn't shut up about this stupid Taylor Swift? That's perfect. But the, I mean, as far as the, I don't know, why are we so diplomatic about some of the bands? It's probably because there's enough stuff out there that, at least this is how it works for me, is that as soon as I have the inkling that I'm not super into something, like I ricochet so fast in the other direction that I don't stick around to learn why I should dislike something or I mean, to my failing, I don't stick around long enough to like figure it out otherwise. So just like as an example, like there's a band, so I've been doing all this like Canadian band stuff lately with that newsletter that I'm doing, and there's a band that Dynalone just signed that's from not too far from here called Seaway, I think, and they're doing a bunch of press right now, and it all sort of lines up, and it's like, okay, this is a band that I should totally talk about and the things that I'm doing, because they are, you know, they're a punk band from Ontario, and that is the requirement for me to be able to pay attention to them in this thing. And they're doing like a really traditional kind of pop punk, and by traditional I mean like Blink-182-y into the 2000s kind of pop punk, like the kind of pop punk that when people have like Facebook groups called Defend Pop Punk, that's what they're talking about, right? And just I went and I put on like one song by them, and it is so far from what I am into, like just like light years away from what I'm into, and so tied to the sound of something that like I don't even think I was into when I was 16, but like I know was around a lot when I was 16, that like I just had this immediate like, blech, like the you know, this is not for me. And so that reaction meant, okay, not for me, I got to go find something that I care about then. And I ping pong in the other way, and I go start like digging into weird bands somewhere else. And then when it comes to like the show like this, you know, bringing up a band like that and being like, ugh, I heard this pop punk band and I really didn't like them, like that is so far from the top of my mind when I get to this point. Because again, like if I got that effort, I'm going to go invest that effort on something that I can get behind. So I pay so little attention to the things that I don't want. And actually, that kind of comes back to a point that Ricky was making earlier in the show too, where where Ricky, you were asking, you know, why do people bother paying attention to people like Kanye and Taylor Swift and things like that? Mm-hmm. And I find like a lot of the times, like I'm like that with a lot of stuff that's in the mainstream, like to a fault, where there's things that I should probably be more aware of as like a person who exists in the pop culture world that I have no idea about, just because I get there and I'm like, I have limited time in my life. I'm going to go listen to something else. And then I completely lose the reference that everyone else is getting. And a lot of the mainstream stuff in me work that way. So there's probably a whole host of like mainstreamy pop punk band things that I should be right pissed off about, but I haven't fucking heard them, just because, you know, like as soon as I smell it, I'm on to something else. Mm-hmm. That's how my brain works. What do you think?
In regards to this person's question, or
yeah, you seemed like you had something you wanted to say. And then
You know, if you want to hear us really, you know, I keep referencing this when I'm on. If you really want to hear us, you know, pounce on something, go find the Transplants Wars episodes. That's a lot of taking shots at the transplants. I mean, you know, here's the thing. Like,
I don't think we really dissed the transplants.
Oh no, I remember dissing the transplants.
Fair enough.
I do. What was I going to say? I mean, here's the thing. You know, when we come to do the podcast and we have like stories that we're going to talk about, like I'm okay with like listening to stuff I've never heard before the podcast and like giving my opinion on it. But if like we know something is not good, like it's just not fun to talk about. That's why you don't. You want us to name a band. That's why you won't hear us really talk about like Falling in Reverse unless we're making fun of them. It's not like, you know, I like, it's more fun for, at least for me, I don't know about you guys, but like when we're really excited about some, like a story, like that makes it more fun. I mean, we can always, I think sometimes we've found like a story that's so outrageously bad that we'll talk about it and just, and make fun of it. I mean, or just kind of rag on it a little bit, but at the same time, I think it's good that like we don't constantly be negative all the time. But I think to change things up every once in a while, it's okay. But I mean,
yeah, you know, just to mix it up.
Yeah.
I'm going to shit on something you like later.
That's fine. Do it.
Well, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Adam White, it's already 10:30. We haven't even actually started the program proper. So I suggest that I forego my song and that we jump right into the news. How about that?
Yeah, that's fine. No one knows what time it is.
Well, true.
Live show, John.
But I'm saying it's already been an hour and we haven't even actually started the program.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Holy fuck. Okay. Yeah, we should probably do that.
I'm seeing 50 right, minutes on mine.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some stuff here. Oh, should I actually do that? I suppose I should do that. It's like someone else do the show for us. Okay. So the first thing we were talking about, The Damned here. So Tony Visconti, who produced many albums for lots of people, including T-Rex, David Bowie, and Thin Lizzy, is going to be producing the new album By The Damned. It's going to come out in 2018 on the Search and Destroy label. Furthermore, as far as like Damned news goes, so bassist Stu West has left the band. So the band put out a statement. It said, "We had a great time with Stu on this long journey. We have infinite respect for him and are forever grateful to his contributions to the Damned. As a result of this mutual understanding, we respect his decision, support him wholeheartedly, and wish him the best of luck and success." So Paul Gray, who was on the Damned's Black album and Strawberries, has rejoined the band to take Stu's place. So there you go. So The Damned has swapped around some members and they are going to be recording with Tony Visconti. John, do you need to quantify for people a little bit about who Tony is and why that's news?
Yeah, Tony Visconti is, you could argue, the most famous producer ever, or the most important producer ever, or if not the most, then I don't know if you can quantify that, but certainly one of the most. You know, he's not the guy that made David Bowie David Bowie, but he's the guy that gave David Bowie the glam rock sound. So David Bowie is very important with the glam rock. Tony Visconti is equally important, at least for the glam rock sound, the glam rock presentation. But not only that, is T-Rex is actually the group that kind of started glam rock, and there was a bit of a thing between Bowie and Mark Bolan of T-Rex, because Bowie kind of stole Visconti from Mark Bolan and became mega famous, where T-Rex always kind of hovered at pretty famous and could never quite reach the next level. But he produced Thin Lizzy. He produced Morrissey. He produced U2, because U2 always said, use some, you know, some, we want the big producer, so we'll use them. We're a terrible band, so hopefully this great producer will make us good. Tony Visconti is basically the guy that you can say took rock and roll, or not the guy, but one of the main guys, maybe one of the three or four main guys, that took rock and roll from the 60s and then into the 70s. He is undeniably one of the most important and one of the most clever producers of all time. Him, Bob Ezrin, these guys are the legendary 70s rock producers. Trying to think of the other one that I'm thinking. Oh, and Eno, of course. Those guys are the legendary 70s rock producers. You cannot overstate his importance when it comes to production or even influence on music as a whole.
I'm kind of curious about what this record's going to be like. I mean, a damned record. When was their last record?
10 years ago.
10 years ago.
No Time for Heroes or something like that. It was an all right record, but it was a little boring and had some filler in it. It could have been a lot tighter.
What do you think this guy will add to the Damned sound then?
Great question, Ricky. And here's what I find is I'm a huge Damned fan. I'm a huge Visconti fan, huge Bowie fan. What I think is very interesting about this and well played in that a lot of bands, when they're trying to, you know, come out with their first record after 10 years, they'll try to modernize their sound or update their sound or saying, you know, we're here in the present. That worked very well for Madonna. That worked very well for David Bowie. David Bowie would use the most modern producers in the 80s and the 90s. It worked, I'm trying to think who else, what other bands that worked really well for. It worked well for the Rolling Stones to a degree. It worked well for the Beastie Boys, well, they produced a lot of their own stuff, but they use producers too. The point being is the Damned are taking the exact opposite approach, and I think Captain Sensible is a big influence on this. Instead of moving towards the future, and U2 always uses the most modern producer, instead of moving towards the most modern guy, they're actually going backwards and going back to their own influence, which is, of course, what they did on the second Damned album when they wanted Syd Barrett but couldn't get him, so they got Nick Wright from Pink Floyd to produce the album. If there's one guy that I think that can make an amazing sounding Damned album, it'll be Tony Visconti. The only thing that I think there is to avoid is what people like from the Damned. People like the high energy rock and Damned songs. The Damned themselves don't really like those songs as much. They like the goth songs on the Daybanian side, and they like the psychedelic songs on the Captain Sensible side. Hopefully, Tony Visconti can take some, I guess, their more mellow or their more melodic side and really give it that rocking edge, just like he did for Bowie, just like he did for T-Rex. So I think it'll come down to whether or not these songs actually will have enough of a snap to them to be good Damned albums. It's not going to be Damned, but however, if we're lucky, it might be the Black album, or if we're really lucky, it might even be kind of like Machine Gun Etiquette. We'll see. But I mean, if do we need another Damned album at this point? No. However, Damned with Tony Visconti, that's got real promise.
Cool.
All right, so we're going to hop over to the next story here to just kind of keep this thing rolling. So there's been a little mini documentary, and by mini we mean like about 5 minutes or so, totally watchable, no matter how much time you have in your life here, has been released about MDC's famous refrain, "No cops, no KKK, no fascist USA." Now, in recent months, that's, of course, been adopted by protest groups in the U.S. and elsewhere to be, you know, no Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA. And Green Day really popularized it by using it on stage during some major televised performance.
VMAs, I believe, honestly.
Yeah. Everything's about the fucking VMAs.
Yeah, fuck the VMAs.
I never watched the VMAs, to tell you the truth.
Jesus Christ. So anyway, so you can find a link to the documentary over on Punk News, or you can probably search it out on YouTube. You should go take a look, because it is a fun little recap of just, you know, where that phrasing came from and how it got into the popular culture and how Green Day doesn't get to take credit for it and all that. And I want to give credit to who made this and who made this. I do not recognize the logo. Let's see.
Oh, I'll tell you the guy's name in a second.
No, it's from a publication called The Outline. So there we go. So you should,
No, was it just
credit to The Outline?
Because I honestly watched a few minutes of it. I didn't watch the whole thing. I didn't learn anything. I mean, I didn't learn anything from this at all. I thought this was pretty basic. But I mean, just because I know where it came from. This actually reminded me, like, I don't think Green Day tried taking credit for it. I think what happened was that they just got associated with it just because there's, you know, in overall they are a bigger band than MDC. So when they did it, they probably got attributed. But I'm curious, like, this seemed like it was much more for people that were like seeing these protests going on, and like, and for people who may have been using it in the protests and not knowing where it came from.
Oh yeah, it is. It is definitely like general audience. Yeah, if you know who MDC is at all, you need to know this.
No, this brought back something that I remembered. After Green Day did that performance, they were on some talk show. I want to say like the Late Late Show or something, and they actually like said no, this was like from a band that was from a band called MDC. It wasn't us.
Oh, they did?
I believe yeah. See, I forgot what talk show was.
I was kind of mad at Green Day because I thought they did not give MDC a shout out kind of on purpose, but I'll have to go back and look for that. If they did, I mean, I definitely think Green Day, because I mean, it really did kind of catch on kind of just because Green Day did it. So I think Green Day should have, you know, give a little bit of props to MDC.
I think they did.
But if they did, well, then I'll give them that.
Yeah.
I'm totally willing to believe that they did. I mean, like we crap on Green Day a lot for
bad music videos,
you know, making dumb songs and things like that. But you know, I don't think they're ill intentioned or thieves. Dillinger
no,
no. So
yes.
Here's a question: I have new MDC albums called Mind Trump. Will that be horribly dated in 4 years, or is that two questions? You know, there's lots of, like, there's Reagan Youth, there's, you know, Children of Reagan, all these Reagan bands, and, you know, the covers with Reagan on it, and you're like, oh man, it just looks like an old record. Mein Trump, will that become dated in 4 years? Because Trump is so damaging, will it serve as a landmark and not look old, or the fact that it'll look old in 4 years or whatever doesn't matter because it's so important to make that statement now? What's the answer?
I think what really depends on is, I mean, that's quite the title. Okay. Like that is not, that's a very bold title. I think whether it becomes dated or not, I think depends on, and I know this sounds basic, but just on how good the record is. If it's a flop and it's not good, it'll be totally forgotten. But I think I've seen the album art. No, maybe I haven't. Actually, I don't think I have.
You have, it's like airbrushed kind of.
I don't remember, but also, it really depends on how it is. I mean, because I mean, if it's a flop, then like, no, then it's going to just kind of be forgotten, I think, but so it's up to them. It's not up to anyone else.
I'm curious how Reagan Youth and bands like that would have been perceived at the exact moment in history when they came about, because you know, having grown up past that era, like when Reagan was president, I was just a baby, so I have no cultural context for that. That isn't nostalgic or isn't like looking back, not nostalgic really, but just like looking at music history. So I look at Reagan Youth and I'm like, man, that's a cool ass name. And you know, and it places them for me as this 80s band that was doing, you know, exciting political music at the time and all that. Right. But then I look at, say, like, you know, MDC doing something called Mein Trumpf. And I'm like, oh, that seems so hacky. Like, just like, it seems not that Dear Leader doesn't deserve it or anything, but just like, it seems not clever. It seems cheap. But at the same time, like, you know, Reagan Youth is a fucking Nazi reference as well. So, you know, I don't know why the one to me seems like it's kind of cool and edgy, and the other one seems, you know, it seems just played, like it seems boring. Like the Trump one to me, it doesn't strike me as that it's going to be like an amazing political document or a really clever argument or anything like that. Like, I picture there's going to be a goofy painting of Donald Trump on the cover, and it's going to be an approximation of a dangerous 80s punk statement. And like I'm not saying that's what it's going to be, but like that's my preconceived notion about it. And I don't know if that's because we're in it right now, And maybe that's what people thought about Reagan Youth back in the day. I don't know. I don't have an answer to that because.
Let's hear how it sounds first. That's all I have to say. I mean, if the music's not good, then the title really doesn't. A title shouldn't carry an album. I mean,
true.
I mean, I don't care what it's about. I hope that's not what happens here. Probably not. I mean, I'll check out the album. Why not?
I mean, in any case, like, you know, Million Dead Cops is a pretty pretty niche product as far as pop culture goes. Like, there's not going to be a whole ton of people outside of the punk scene that are going to hear it, regardless of what it's called.
Yeah, so. But I mean, will it be like
great the, name?
But will it
great
be,
name?
Will it be like? Will it be? You know. Their first record. I mean, because their first record is like the really big one. I'm not. I don't really listen to them a ton, but like that's like their classic, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So will this be? So the question is, with the title like that, will it have that standing like their first record? I think that, and that's the big question.
I don't know. I can't think about MDC without thinking about. Which NoFX song is it? Is it Two Jealous Agains?
I've got Two Jealous Agains, or I've got One Jealous Again, which is one of my favorite titles ever.
It was like the last time I was at the, or the first time I was at the Roxy, it was MDC and Million of Dead Cops. It was DOA and Million of Dead Cops, and you know, Something Was Drunker Than I Could Believe, and the other one sounded the same and kind of sucks, something like that. I'm trying to remember the lyrics of that song. Anyways,
MDC.
Said he wasn't a fan.
Really, Fat Mike's not a fan of MDC. I'm surprised by that.
Well, 16-year-old Fat Mike in the song thought their songs all sounded the same and kind of sucked.
MDC, first punk rock ride I was ever in.
You were in more than one.
In a cop car?
No, I've only been in one.
Okay, here, let's take a quick musical break here. Ricky, play a song, and then we're going to come back, sure. And we're going to talk about some stuff.
Okay, so. One record that I think did not get enough praise, it came out earlier this year, but they were fantastic. The album's really, really great. Was Western Addiction's Tremulous. Really great stuff. I saw them live. Have either of you seen them live recently?
Yeah, I saw them live. Was it at Punk Rock Bowling where I saw them?
No.
I saw them live.
Oh, no.
It was for Nightbirds.
Yeah.
It was opening for Nightbirds. That's why.
Yeah, okay. Still, I mean, I've been, you know, like I talked about earlier, I was at It's Not Dead Fest. I was at Punk Rock Bowling this year. They were one of the best bands I've seen perform live this year so far. They were fantastic. When I saw them, they opened for Good Riddance. Really, really amazing. If you haven't checked this record out, what I would suggest is really don't kind of skip through it. This is an album that flows quite well. I think we talked with one of them, with Jason on episode 350. And if you remember that brief interview, we talked, you know, he said that they purposely made it an album that flows from beginning to end, and it really does, and they did a really great job. It's definitely one of the best records of the year. So I'm going to play Family of Boys from Tremulous by Western Addiction. Here it is. Let's see it!
All right, we're back. That was Western Addiction. John, which version of this story are we going to take? The more recent one or the early?
Yeah, well, the more recent because it has all the info, but worse.
All right, here, you give this one a read.
All right, this is heavy duty stuff, and this is not funny, and this is sad. No matter how this turns out, it's sad. So what happens there's a death metal band from Poland called Decapitated, and actually they're pretty well known. They were arrested this past weekend in L.A. Originally, they were arrested for allegedly kidnapping a young woman. It wasn't clear exactly what happened, but apparently they were accused of kidnapping a young woman, then letting her go, then driving down to L.A. Then the young woman reported the crime to the police, and the police in L.A. Arrested them. However, more details have come to light. Allegedly, that the young woman got on the bus with her friends, and it's unclear exactly what happened with regards to the friend. Either the friend left before the other woman did, or she was there but not in the area where the following happened. Is the young woman, the victim, or the alleged victim, or however you want to put it, she was in a tour van, and she felt the vibe change. This is I'll just paraphrase the court documents. She felt the vibe change and wanted to leave, so she went to the bathroom. And then as soon as she stepped out of the bathroom, one of the band members held her and said, well, you have to have some fun first. And she said she wanted to leave. And then the band gang raped her, all four members. Eventually, they let the young woman off the bus. The young woman walked down the street, I believe, called her family, then called the police pretty much immediately afterwards. The police found that she had abrasions on her arms that were the type of abrasions that would come from forcibly restraining someone, and also she had bloody knuckles. And so right now the band is in L.A. They're waiting extradition to Washington State. They're not fighting extradition. They are denying the charges. However, they released a statement saying, we're not guilty. There's another side to the story to this. However, in the court documents that I haven't seen, and I think no one has really, they've only been paraphrased, unfortunately, the four band members were interviewed, and they gave semi-conflicting stories. One band member said he had never seen the girl before. One band member said the woman had sex with two of the guys, but the third guy wasn't a part of it. Another guy said – so their stories didn't jive with each other exactly. And so right now they're awaiting extradition to Washington State. It's a bad scene all around. I've got a couple of thoughts on this. Practicality. So I don't know if you guys want me to go first or if you guys want to respond, then I'll go. It's up to you guys.
I'll be brief. I mean, I didn't, you know, I didn't read these specifically. I didn't realize that they were, that this happened around me. Santa Ana's not that close, but, obviously this is all, alleged, but still, if this is true, this is really, really bad. This is off. This is truly horrific.
Yeah, I have nothing to chime in here for. This whole thing is scary and gross and, you know, is thankfully in the hands of authorities now. So,
one of the problems is, like, you got two witnesses. Your only witnesses are, like, the young woman and the four guys. And how do you solve that problem? I'll just give a bit of advice. Young people or people in general, boys and girls, honestly, you probably shouldn't go on a bus with a band. If it was a perfect world, that should be no problem. You should go on and no problem whatsoever. However, in reality, guys in bands are creepy. Not all of them, but some of them. Guys in bands are looking to get laid, and if they don't get laid, then they get violent sometimes. So you really shouldn't. And also, especially when there's drugs and alcohol involved, you don't want to get involved in that situation. It's a sad fact of life, but it's really not a good idea to do that kind of a thing.
Let me just throw one thing in there. If you do go on, I mean, at least make sure you're facing and you're starting to get kind of weirded out. At least a bus is tough because there's only really one exit. So at least just stand near the door. You know, I'm not blaming anyone, but the best thing to do is just make sure, you know, you're near the exit. If shit turns around that quickly.
I just think you should go on the bus to begin with.
True. I mean, that too. I mean, if you have to.
I think it's 2020. And if everyone's having a good time, come on our bus. Come on our bus. We're having fun. I can see how that would happen. But,
you know,
I mean, if they're not willing to hang out with you off the bus and they're only willing to hang out with you on the bus, what does that say?
That's a good point. That's a very fair point. Sure.
So, I mean, it's a sad situation.
Yeah.
I don't know how you parse this because, it's looking kind of bad for the band. And we don't need to say it, but a band should never ever, or no one should ever, ever force someone against their will. It's just sad. And no matter how this turns out, it's not going to be a good ending. You know what I mean? So.
All right, no good segue out of that. But anyways, there's a new Ted Leo music video that you should go check out. Ted, he went and he kickstarted a record earlier in the year that project became the full length called The Hanged Man. I'm actually one of the supporters of that. I'm waiting for mine to show up in the mail right now. So anyways, he posted a video for the song Can't Go Back over at Stereo Gum, or it's on YouTube if you want to go check it out. And a whole wad of tour dates that he's going to be out there supporting the release in. So, that's there. I don't know. There's probably not a whole ton that we
I have a lot to say about this. Yes. A couple of things is this song is relatively upbeat, but actually if you read, there's a couple of interviews with him. The past few years, it seemed as though were very rough for Ted Leo. They were rough because he wasn't achieving the kind of success both personally and economically that he was hoping to achieve, and also his wife and him had a miscarriage, or his wife had a miscarriage, and that was very hard for both of them. So the album is kind of upbeat, but it's about some depressing issues, which is interesting. I thought this video was funny. It's kind of a throwback to the late 70s, early 80s videos. You know, Billy Joel's got videos like this. Elton John's got some videos like this. But specifically, Hall & Oates have several videos like this. And I found this particularly interesting. This song, I thought this song was pretty good. But this song is a Hall & Oates song. You could drop this on a classic Hall & Oates record, and it fits right on there. And so I found this interesting in that Ted Leo is a punk rocker or an indie guy or whatever. It's interesting that the indie scene has completely embraced Hall & Oates, who 30 years ago would have been completely derided. You know, do people not recognize that this is a Hall & Oates song? Do people think Hall & Oates is cool now? You know, or because there's no division between indie and pop now, that everything's cool and Hall & Oates is cool? Or is it that, you know, the Pitchfork crowd or whatever, they listen to such weak music that they now have embraced, you know, lounge rock, if you will. I like Hall & Oates. I've got the greatest hits. I spin it fairly frequently. But this is a Hall & Oates song, and there's a punk guy doing a Hall & Oates song, and no one's like saying, how come this indie guy is doing, you know, early 80s, late 70s, FM soft rock.
So I've purposefully not listened to the stream of this full length yet. So just because I know the vinyl's coming, I'd rather just kind of consume it that way. But from what I understand about it is that like it's stylistically a little bit all over the place, like on purpose. And this would be one aspect of the all over the placeness. So I think taken in isolation, I don't know if it's necessarily indicative of a pattern or the general slant of Ted's current songwriting, but it's a direction that he went with on it. It is curious that they took it and decided that it was enough of a single though that they made a whole video about it and all that. Like, that's interesting. John, why do you know so much about Hall & Oates? Is it because they're from Philly?
I like Hall & Oates. However, with the Hall & Oates, all you need is their greatest hits. I've got about six Hall & Oates albums, and it's their hits and a bunch of filler that you don't need. Really, you only need their greatest hits. Adam, what question? Did you watch this video?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that obviously this video is supposed to be amusing. It's kind of poking fun at those late 70s videos. Do you agree?
Oh yeah, and like okay. He's given like super creepy looks and stuff like that at some point. This actually almost reminded me of like I want to say like which of the kids in the hall does it remind me of?
The point being is at the end of this, he plays it pretty straight. Like the video starts how it ends. It's kind of making fun of those late 70s videos.
Yeah.
Do you think they should have put a twist at the end? And I'll give an example. Katie Goodman on her third album or her second album, she did two or three videos kind of like these, kind of like romanticized vision of a certain decade. But then at the end of her videos, she's always murdering people brutally. You know what I mean? So it kind of like gave it a twist, which I found was amusing. Do you think this could have benefited more from a little twist at the end or somewhere? Or do you think...
I don't think he needs to like get so scared about like being perceived as not punk that he needs to punctuate.
Well, it's not a question of punk. It's a question of interesting. intellectually stimulating, because you get the joke in the first 30 seconds. Do I need something else at the last 30 seconds to give me that extra jolt, or is the joke enough to sustain itself?
I don't know. I think the joke's enough. If you would have went and then just like, yeah, and let's say that he then murders someone at the end of the video, you know, is that going to, that's going to be a little bit,
is it too much?
Yeah. It's like you're, I mean, to me, that says like, because there's already sort of like an underlying joke to the whole thing and just the way that it's staged and shot and all that. Right. So if you're going to do something totally gonzo at the end of it, then it says that you weren't so confident that you were selling the joke before that you needed to take it like way over the top to really punctuate that.
So the twist would underscore the joke itself and make the joke itself less strong.
It would chicken out on the joke. Anyways, I was thinking Scott Thompson. I could see like Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall. Like, it's not quite like a Buddy Cole thing that they're doing here, but there's even just like the damn screenshot of this where him just like staring at the camera. There's something about it that is very, very like that sort of just like dry.
I kind
of humor out of that.
I couldn't get over how much. I mean, if this was a Hall & Oates song, it probably would have been a big hit. I couldn't get over how much this mimicked Hall & Oates. I read it saying Hall & Oates over and over and over.
You are. It's weird.
But this is a Hall & Oates song. It really is.
This is why I'm a fan of Ted, is that like, dude can write good songs. In some better universe, Ted Leo would have been a hit maker. But, you know, what are you going to do?
I mean, if this came out in 1978, this would have been a huge hit. You agree?
Yeah, no, totally. It's got the vibe too. And like the song itself, like the video is kind of weird, but like the song is not playing it for jokes, right? The song is straight. There's nothing like lyrically or musically about the song that says like they're taking the piss out of that style of music or anything like that. Like they're playing it, you know, totally straight. So it could. All right. This has been an incredibly long episode, but we are going to wrap it up with something that Ricky wants to talk about.
Oh, okay. I got a lot to say about this.
All right, here. I will announce it, and then you will say a lot of things about it then.
Oh, okay.
Because I figure I'm going to announce this and you're going to talk for 45
minutes. Well, I was curious. I thought I would ask you. Go ahead. Whatever.
You are allowed to converse with us after this.
Okay.
It's still part of the rules. Okay.
Right.
So
only if it's about Hall & Oates. If it's about Hall & Oates, I'll talk on it. If it's not, I won't.
Okay.
Okay. Well, it's close. So Direct Hit and Pairs have announced that they're going to release a split LP. The release is going to be called Human Movement. It's coming out on November 3rd via Fat Wreck. In addition to new songs from both bands, it features them covering each other. So Direct Hit covers You're Boring by Pairs, and Pairs covers The World Is Ending by Direct Hit. You can find, what else here? So you can find album details and everything about this on Punk News. There's a stream of the song Arduous Angel by Pairs and Blood on Your Tongue by Direct Hit that you can go check out. But yeah, the cover art is on Punk News. The track listing is on Punk News. Both bands did 6 songs. And Ricky has had a slight heart attack when this was announced.
Not a heart attack, but definitely a stroke. I found out about this. they announced this really late in the day for me, and I was at the gym, so I had to pre-order this on my phone. wasn't thrilled about that, but no, I mean these are two bands that I have been pushing on Punk News for a long time, and the fact that they're doing a split together, which is very BYO of them, is pretty fucking mind blowing. I don't know what the odds are. I know the bands are good friends and stuff like that, but that the fact that they put this together is incredible. I find it interesting that they're both covering songs from albums that did not come out on Fat Wreck. I think that's kind of a cool thing that they did. I loved the new songs that they put out, Arduous Angel and Blood on Your Tongue. I think they're great. I'm really interested to hear what the covers sound like. I mean, what does Pairs covering Direct Hit sound like at this point? That would be really, really cool. And I want to see what Direct Hit does with You're Boring. I mean, I ordered two copies of this because I'm insane, and I can't wait. This could easily be my number one if everything goes according to plan, which I probably would. But this is pretty amazing. I mean, I was pushing Direct Hit. I mean, Direct Hit. The first time I saw Direct Hit was my first review for Punk News ever, before I was even on the staff, like a couple of years before I was on the staff. And I was the one pushing Pears right when Go to Prison was being pushed by Ryan Young over at Anxious and Angry. So this is quite the full circle we got here. So I am very excited. What about you guys? Pears and Direct Hit. It's a Ricky story. What do you want?
I'm so happy you're happy.
Well, thank you, Adam. John?
You know, a lot of people think Italian Girls is a pretty good song. I think it's pretty good, but it doesn't deserve to be on their greatest hits.
Okay.
You know, One-on-One, Maneater, Rich Girl,
and
Adult Education.
John is still in the Hall & Oates sphere. Well,
no, this is cool, Ricky. I feel your excitement in that, like, when two of your favorite bands put out a split release, that's exciting. I know these are your two favorite bands. So, Ricky, I'm sure you will enjoy this, and I'm sure it will be great, and I'm sure the people that like this, these bands will like this.
I have one question. How come bands don't do this more? They used to. But these are really cool. These are cool releases when they do, like more than just a split EP.
Well, yeah. As a fan myself, I rarely listen to the other side. If I don't know anything about the band, I'll listen to it like once and be like, oh, that's not my thing. So as a fan, I'd rather have collaborative albums where the bands work together, but I realize from a financial standpoint and a logistical standpoint, that's much more difficult than a split album.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of the BYO records, but like I have the one with Alkaline Trio and One Man Army. That one's fantastic. So I kind of hope that this becomes more of a thing. I mean, if bands aren't...
Was it Alkaline Trio and One Man Army?
Yeah, it's BYO, dude.
No, because like they did... because Alkaline Trio and Hot Water Music did one, right? And then Anti-Flag and Bouncing Souls.
I'm pretty sure...
Like, there's No Effects and Rancid.
Yes,
no
there
effects
is.
And Rancid, of course.
Hang on a second. Yeah, it's
God, I reviewed that. Dude, if you want to read something that is like a horribly overwrought fucking Adam review from back when I was trying too hard, go read that. Oof.
Ricky,
hang on a second. I'm looking this up.
Ricky, on the split, not every song is a cover, just one song per band.
Yeah, just one song per band.
That's the way to do it.
Sure.
That's the way to do it.
Alkaline Trio and One Man Army in 2004 put out a BYO split.
Huh, all right.
It's great.
Oh, no, wait, no. Was Alkaline Trio and Hot Water Music on BYO, or was that on Jade Tree? That may have been on Jade Tree. Anyways, yeah, I like splits in general, but like split LPs are so fucking rare that they always seem special when they crop up, because it's like that's a commitment, right?
Yeah.
You bet. Every once in a while you get like a split 7-inch where clearly one of the bands of the two is just phoned it in just to be on a release. I have a fucking like Less Than Jake Megadeth split 7-inch, right? And
wait, you really? You,
yeah, like and you're like guaranteed that like fucking like Megadeth had zero to do with that,
yeah.
Right? But whoever in their management like tossed out a whatever.
By the way, it was Jade Tree that did the Alkaline Trio Hot Water Music split.
That's amazing. Less Than Jake and Megadeth. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm not making that up. Was that a CD or a
7-inch Fueled by Ramen 1999?
I absolutely own that, right? But like I can't imagine that like Megadeth actually had like all that much to do with it, right? Like it just doesn't seem, but maybe, but that doesn't seem
I'll tell you, great split, Slayer and TSOL, fantastic split when we're talking punk and metal.
Yeah, so anyways, the other thing too is like I've got a few split LPs that the bands just like took them as this like opportunity to do something interesting or to do something like that you would not have otherwise done. And it became like a rare thing. Like I have this rare, Constantine split LP where like the cons on their whole side of it do nothing but cover Neil Young songs, but they don't cover Neil Young songs people know. They cover like weird shit Neil Young songs, like stuff that was on Trans and stuff like that. And then the other side of it is it was like a band called The Unintended, and they do nothing but cover Gordon Lightfoot songs. So and they put it out in like a super rare quantity and all that, and just, I don't know, there's something very special about split LPs. So, but Ricky, like these are two of your bands, man.
I know,
so
I was super surprised.
I'm not super surprised given that they're all members of the Fat Wreck universe. So like there wasn't a whole ton of logistics that had to go into this compared to some things, but
like how
I'm surprised they're doing a split LP at all.
Yeah. I mean, does Fat ever, I don't remember Fat ever doing a split LP. So
first I can think of,
yeah.
But yeah, hey, so that's cool. I mean, in the spirit of the letter that we got at the start of the show, I don't give a shit about any of this. no, I mean, like, I bear neither of these bands any ill will. I went and I listened to the two songs that were on here, and they were both fine, but I don't remember either of them at this point. And there's something about like both these bands that like they sound like so many other bands that play this style of music that I have a hard time zeroing in on them after I've heard them, but as I'm listening to them, I enjoy them. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I get the feeling that like if I had some sort of hook, like they were a band that I saw play a lot live, or they were a local band or something like that, I'd probably be incredibly into them. But at this point, they're just sort of like one more Epiphat sounding band that I don't have enough space in my brain for.
No, go. If you can see them, Adam, go see both bands. They're amazing. Both of them.
That has done a split CD before, but not the vinyl itself, but it's a full length album.
Who'd they do it with?
Leftover Crack Citizen Finch.
Oh, that's right. Well, that was Alternative Tentacles also put that too.
Alternative Tentacles did the vinyl, Fat did the CD.
Oh.
At a time when CDs were more valuable than vinyl, now it's completely flip flopped.
Oh, God, I should have known that. Sorry, you know, the Citizen Fish split with Leftover Crack, it's not Leftover Crack best.
No, it's not. It's not.
So.
It really isn't.
Anyways, so yeah, so that happened. So I guess that's the end of the show because we've recorded like several hours of audio for some reason on this one. It's all this fucking Taylor Swift thing. So we're never going to talk about that again.
Thank you.
just in the interest of not running out of
Swifty for life,
real tape, life.
And not giving me a fucking aneurysm. No more of this shit.
All right, should we play a song and get out of here?
Play
or
a song.
What do you want to do? All right, so if anyone wants to email us, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. So I'm going to play a song from a band from Vancouver that moved to Toronto recently called Tough Age. In Toronto, they were back in the Vancouver era, they were a bigger band. When they moved, they kind of pared themselves down. They're a three-piece now. They've changed up their sound a little bit. They have a full-length that's coming out on Mint in October, which is called Shame. And they previewed this sound on a 7-inch that they released in whenever the hell Ottawa explosion was June. So they released a 7-inch in June that previewed this. They've taken on way more of sort of like a lo-fi indie pop kind of vibe compared to the pop punk band that they were. There's a lot of influence of the New Zealand Flying Nun label that's on here. So I'm going to play a song from here called, you know what? In the interest of the over long show, I'm going to play a song that's less than a minute long. So this song is called Guess Not. It's from the Unclean 7-inch from Tough Age. They have a full length again called Shame coming out in October. It's a big deal. I'm going to talk about it a lot because it's really good. But anyways, so this is Guess Not by Tough Age. Bye.
Yeah.
This has been a Valor Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@valorundergroundstudios.com.